Welcome to episode 18 of Coaster Redux. My name is Eric, and I'm a lifelong roller coaster enthusiast, but up until lately, I've been kind of a lazy one. For years, I'd all but forgotten my roller coaster obsession from high school and college. Then during the pandemic, I started following the coaster world again, and after last year's road trip, I'm now on a mission to ride as many new coasters as I can. This is the story of my revived roller coaster fandom, and I'm nearing the end of my second theme park road trip. I drove from Florida to Massachusetts to spend time with family and friends where I grew up, and visited three parks on the ride north. After taking a five-day break from coasters in my hometown, I started the southbound run at Six Flags New England on Monday, then spent yesterday at Knoebels. The traditional amusement park had such a classic appeal with its antique flat rides and amazing wood coasters. Now it's time for the main event, the park I've been most looking forward to visiting since Cedar Point last summer. Today will be my first of two full days at Hershey Park, and man does this lineup look stacked with three Intamins, a brand new RMC, and the newest B&M Hyper in America. I'll be joined on this day by my brother Carl and his husband Marcus. I couldn't be more excited to share this experience with them. In fact, Carl's going to join me later on in this episode, and we'll talk about our experiences and rank our top five rides in the park. Because of this, I'm going to describe the rides without going too in-depth on my opinions. I'll save that for the Q&A. I know as a roller coaster fan that one of my favorite parts of the hobby is getting the reaction of somebody coming off a ride they've never ridden before. That's what I want to share with you. And with that, join me for our first-time reactions to one of the finest roller coaster collections in America. The final chapter of the Intamin trip starts right now on Coaster Redux.
Slap bars, hands up high, brakes off, dispatch ready, go. Coaster Redux.
We elected to sleep in the next morning since the park didn't open till 11. Yesterday's clouds were gone as I opened my curtains to find unlimited visibility above the tarmac at Harrisburg International. I met my brother for breakfast in the lobby of the hotel, and we caught up over Belgian waffles from the self-serve station. Carl and Marcus were only able to stay for the first day, so after breakfast we agreed to meet back downstairs at 10:30, intending to rope drop the park. With everybody ready to go, we loaded into my car for the 20-minute jaunt from Harrisburg to the sweetest place on Earth. I listened to the Business Wars podcast describing the history of Hershey and M&M Mars on my way here. Milton Hershey founded this town with the goal to create a perfect community for the workers in his chocolate factory. We passed through a few small towns with that same old-timey feel as Six Flags New England's Agawam before turning on to Hershey Park Drive. The Milton S. Hershey School sits atop a grassy hill to the left, the words Welcome to Hershey neatly printed in white on its lawn. The park comes into view on the right, and it's part of a massive entertainment complex shared with an outdoor stadium, an indoor arena, and the Chocolate World Visitor Center. The traffic pattern is unusual. It seems like you have to make a complete loop around the parking lot before actually being directed into a space. The pair of hypercoasters, Skyrush and Candemonium, are visible up ahead, but the first roller coaster to catch my eye was Wildcat's Revenge, the new for 2023 RMC Hybrid. Its wood structure with red rails over black steel supports can't be missed. We parked the car and began the long walk towards the gate. Hershey's Chocolate World, the museum and visitor center all about the candy company, is to the right, and the massive new front entrance is straight ahead. This entry plaza was added in 2020, and it makes a bold first impression. The park's logo sits atop the pavilion covering the gate, and the matching chocolate brown lift hill of Candemonium rises behind it. This B&M Hyper opened alongside the new entrance as the anchor attraction to the new Chocolate Town area. The main gift shop is to the left, featuring Milton's Ice Cream Parlor. It's all done up in a classic red brick with brown roofs, and it looks traditional yet fresh. Upon entering the park, Candemonium Station matches the rest of the area, with its twisting finale surrounding a kisses-shaped fountain. As enticing as this coaster looks, we decided to save it for later. Our first ride of the day would be Fahrenheit, an Intamin looping coaster known for low capacity. We figured we'd get on this one early since it's known to have one of the longest lines in the park. We passed through Founders Way, the park's main street, and hung a left towards Pioneer Frontier. The park has a sort of elongated L-shaped layout, and we were headed towards the far north end. Fahrenheit's track is the most vivid orange possible with perfectly contrasting blue supports. It's been painted recently, and this just might be my favorite coaster color scheme ever. The wooden station sports the ride's tagline, 97 degrees and falling fast. Opened in 2008, the ride features a vertical lift, beyond vertical drop at, you guessed it, 97 degrees, and six inversions. What's more, they packed 2,700 feet of track into an impossibly small plot of land, making this coaster chock full of near misses. This is one of so many rides I was hyped up for in the park because it's super unique, and of course, it's an Intamin. We entered the queue and found two of the ride's three 12-passenger trains on the track. These short trains are what causes the capacity to be so low, but they also make its tight maneuvers possible. After only a few minutes, we opted for the back row. I rode first with Carl and Marcus riding together on the next train. The restraints are the same as Maverick at Cedar Point, an over-the-shoulder lap bar with an accompanying vest restraint. They're comfortable enough, but riding hands up doesn't really work. I typically put my hands to the side or just out in front so those vests don't dig into my shoulders. The train leaves the station and turns right before engaging the vertical lift hill. You quickly climb to 121 feet and there's no slowdown or hold at the top, resulting in complete ejection in the back row. Then there's an aggressive pullout and you enter the first two inversions, the Norwegian Loop, named for a similar element on Speed Monster in Norway, which opened 2 years earlier. You rise up and start to get airtime before a rapid snap to the left as the track falls beneath itself. It's a wicked moment. Then you reverse course and exit the element in a mirror image. Fahrenheit wastes no time as you head upside down twice more in a cobra roll. It's whippy, smooth, and intense. Next come two right-hand corkscrews in a row before a sharp right-hand turnaround, a bunny hill providing ejector airtime, and a hard left turn heading up into the final brakes. I so wish more parks hired Intamin to build this style of ride. Fahrenheit is smooth, forceful, and interesting. Maybe that's why I like it so much. It's the best inversion-focused coaster I've ever been on. I'd take it over any B&M looper. Gerstlauer has built a lot of similar rides, but the vast majority of them opened after Fahrenheit, and based on the ones I've ridden, this one does it better. With Intamin number 1 under our belts, we decided to head next door to ride Wildcat's Revenge. We walked uphill beneath a canopy of trees and approached the coaster's black and red maintenance shed. Trains marauded around a tight helix between the two zero-G rolls. A few steps later, we entered the queue for Hershey Park's newest ride. Great Coasters International opened their first roller coaster at Hershey Park in 1996, a wood twister featuring high bank turns that continue to be their trademark to this day. This new Wildcat shared its name with Hershey's first roller coaster, which opened in 1923. Wildcat 2.0 began showing its age and had been high on enthusiasts' list for the best candidates for the RMC treatment for several years. In July of 2022, the Wildcat gave its final rides, and it wasn't long before Hershey Park confirmed everyone's suspicions that it would in fact become the newest RMC hybrid. Similar to Iron Gwazi, Wildcat's Revenge would be substantially taller than the original. A new 140-foot steel truss lift hill would get things started, followed by the world's largest step-up underflip, which used the original lift hill and first drop structure. The queue for this tangled web of track passes right against the middle of the ride, with trains rocketing past just out of arm's reach. It's an incredible photo op. Before climbing the stairs into the station, Hershey Park requires all loose items be placed in a free double-sided locker, just like the ones on Velocicoaster. This not only helps with safety on this aggressive ride, but it's part of how they designed it to maximize capacity. Wildcat's Revenge features a separate load and unload station, so you can't leave belongings on the platform. I wore shorts with zipper pockets, and the attendant was fine with me having my phone, wallet, and keys with me on the ride. This was where we encountered the line, and it was only about 10 minutes before we were ready to board.
Welcome to Wildcat's Revenge. Once the gates are open, please load
We selected the back two rows of the train for our first ride, and as we waited, I was beyond impressed by the efficiency of the Wildcat's Revenge crew. They were running three trains and kept everybody moving. It wasn't uncommon that the train ahead of you would pass over the pre-lift section while you rolled through it. I can think of several parks that could learn from Hershey's RMC operations. They were crushing it. The trains are gorgeous as well, with an angry-looking wildcat clawing its way through the front of an old minecart. I sat down in the back row with Carl and Marcus ahead of me, and it was time to take on my second brand new RMC of the year. I'm excited to compare this with Airy Force 1, which I rode back in April. Statistically, they're very similar. Airy Force is 15 feet taller and 1 degree steeper. Wildcat is 110 feet longer. Both feature four inversions, yet their layouts couldn't be more different. They're also the first two RMCs designed by Joe Draves, who succeeded retired legend Alan Schilke in creating the ride's center lines. He's credited with designing rides like Max Force at Six Flags Great America for S&S and Lightning Run at Kentucky Kingdom for Chance Rides.
All set.
As you roll out of the station, you enter what is by far the best RMC pre-lift I've experienced. You drop down quickly, undulating beneath the turnaround between the two final inversions, then engage the steepest lift I've ever seen on an iBox. The lift hill jogs slowly upward until the train ahead of you parks in the station, then accelerates to full speed. Pinnacle approaches quickly with the Milton S. Hershey School standing proud straight ahead. Then down we go. It's a great first drop. Back row riders get ejected before rising up into that step-up underflip. You twist upward to the left, yet don't fully unbank before turning out to the right and spiraling downward. It's a whippy element, and the cat is off to a great start. Then you charge over a straight airtime hill, providing more ejector before a small outer bank hump leading into the left-hand wave turn. There's some great sideways airtime here, but we're just getting warmed up. You hurtle through the zero-G stall. It's not the longest of these elements out there, but you still get that perfect weightless feeling through the inversion. Another mini wave turn follows as the train banks right. Then you rise up and the track flattens out. You're thrown hard to the right in a ridiculous lateral moment as the track turns left with no banking. You drop down and enter the first zero-G roll, and it's quick and snappy. You then turn 270 degrees to the left and whip through a second zero-G roll that crosses the base of the lift. Wildcat's Revenge concludes with a couple of S-bending bunny hops before another unbanked lateral left turn crushes your ribcage before entering the brakes. Well, that was a lot. Of course it was amazing. I absolutely loved it. It's one of the most fast-paced rides I've ever experienced. You get those rapid-fire gut punches of airtime and laterals without a second to breathe. My brain was still trying to process this roller coaster as we gently returned to the unload station. It felt like riding through a blender. Turns out the guy sitting to my left was a fellow enthusiast. He turned to me and asked which I liked better. I paused for a second before I remembered I was wearing an Air Force One shirt that day, and I clumsily replied that I didn't know yet. This was my first ride on Wildcat, and I was still processing. He immediately understood, and I joined Carl and Marcus for the walk down the stairs to the lockers where they retrieved their belongings and returned to the midway. We were doing great on time. We only waited about 15 minutes for each of our first two rides, but the park was starting to get busier. We reversed direction and walked back by Fahrenheit. This time we took a left, walking deeper into the Pioneer Frontier section. We passed Jolly Rancher Remix, the newly refurbished Vekoma Boomerang, and the ride looked great with fresh paint and theming. Our next stop was Storm Runner, the park's intimate accelerator hydraulic launch coaster. After riding King to Ka for the first time last week, I was really hyped up for this one, especially since it has more of a layout following the launch and top hat. We entered the queue and climbed the stairs into the station. The ride only had one train operating, with the second parked on the opposite side of the dual load platform. It seemed like two train ops require the use of both sides of the station, meaning a second ride crew would be needed. Bummer there. While it's a short ride, it would still be nice to have a second train loading while the first one is on the course. While the line was contained within the station, it was slow moving. Storm Runner opened in 2004. It was the first Intamin to open at the park and the third hydraulic launch coaster, following Accelerator at Knott's Berry Farm and Top Thrill Dragster at Cedar Point. Riders accelerate from 0 to 72 miles an hour in 2 seconds flat, and ascend a 150-foot top hat before diving 180 feet due to terrain. Unlike its predecessors with T-bars, Storm Runner features the same restraints as Fahrenheit, presumably because it has inversions. After about 25 minutes in line, we climbed aboard for a back row ride. With the all clear, we gently rolled out to the launch track.
All right, riders, sit upright with your head back and hold on tight to the ground at all times. Keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
I love the build-up to the launch on these rides. You coast out and the train pauses, then backs up slightly to engage the catch car with a thud.
Get ready. Here we go.
Within a split second, the train charges forward with a ferocity unique to this launch system. It's got that intimate shake like King Ka, but it's not nearly as intense. You pull up aggressively and twist to the left. The train slows at the peak, then the airtime comes on hard in the back. My shoulders are extending those vest restraints as far as they're allowed to stretch, and I love that the drop off the top hat is straight with no twist. It feels like a drop while the twisting ones feel more like inversions. Next up is the Cobra Loop, which is basically an Immelmann, but the exit has some strange profiling. There's a bit of hang time at the top, and it's more punchy than what you would find on a B&M. Next up is the most unique element on the ride, the flying snake dive. You rise up as if you're heading into an airtime hill, but at the top the track levels out and you enter an inline twist and a half. I think you come off your seat just before entering the inversion, and it seems like you just keep twisting through those 540 degrees of rotation. The track then dives down beneath itself while still twisting. It's a very fluid maneuver, and it feels so right. You then begin climbing back upward and get a couple of snappy twists, first to the right, then back to the left. Kinda gave me a bit of a Maverick vibe, though not nearly as intense. Then you enter a downward-sloped brake run and turn left before returning to the station. While so many of this ride type are considered one-trick ponies, this Renegade Stallion is anything but. Sure, it's a short ride, but you get the thrill of the launch, great airtime over the top hat, and three completely unique inversions to round out the experience. Hershey's first two Intamins absolutely delivered, and the next one was not only my most anticipated coaster in the park, but of the whole trip. We left Storm Runner and climbed upward towards the back of the park, passing the Triple Tower S&S Freefall rides, and reaching the park's highest elevation, Kissing Tower Hill. It's named for the park's observation tower. The station for Great Bear is here, but we bypassed the B&M invert on the way to the hollow. This coaster makes its presence known with one of the loudest B&M roars I've ever heard. This compact valley is home to four roller coasters built over and under one another, with a small creek running through the middle. While all of these visuals are impressive, this area is dominated by the yellow lift hill of Skyrush. It's held up by only two blue support columns, and the profile looks weird. Unlike most B&M hyperdrops, its summit is more rounded. Then at the maximum angle of descent, the pullout begins immediately. Strange. Opened in 2012, this is the most recent Intamin hypercoaster to open in the US, maybe with good reason, but more on that later. It features a 200-foot cable lift hill and four across trains, with the outer seats being floorless, meaning Skyrush is also a wing coaster. The layout is squeezed over Spring Creek, which passes between the Comet Wood Coaster, Great Bear, and a maintenance road. At 3,600 feet long, it just might be the shortest hyper out there on track length. Skyrush is praised for its insane ejector airtime and non-stop pacing, but it's got an Achilles heel. The restraints are said to tighten on riders' legs during the ride, earning it the nickname Thigh Crush. You all know I'm a sucker for intimate airtime, and many say this has some of the strongest out there, so it was go time. Hershey offers free lockers opposite the entrance, and we emptied our pockets to avoid the possibility of phone crush or key crush. There's a separate line for the front row, and it was long, so we climbed the stairs for all the other rows to find it would only be a handful of cycles before we were on board. Skyrush only had one train operating, but the line was short enough and we were on board within 10 minutes. It's a nice-looking train, its blue-gray contrasting nicely with the yellow track. Its nose looks like a Formula One car.
You will be reaching speeds of approximately 75 miles per hour. Strict adherence to these rules is required. Thank you for your cooperation, and enjoy your ride on Skyrush.
We ended up in the second to last row, and I opted to ride center right. I lowered the lap bar from over the shoulder, and it felt similar to Pantheon's. How bad can this be? Once we were checked, the train began its forward roll. Before we were clear of that station, the elevator cable went into overdrive. It felt unnerving. I know cable lifts are fast, but this is unnatural. Like something just isn't right. We shouldn't be going over that drop with this much speed, right? It's too fast, and that's just the lift hill. We reached the top and got yanked downward with stunning ejector. That max angle point I mentioned has a kink, and the train begins to turn slightly to the right, and it just keeps going faster. You bank hard and pull up into an elongated camelback. I'd estimate this is half the height of the drop, and the airtime is prolonged and extreme. Skyrush then begins its first turnaround with a low left-hand turn. You pull up and level out into another airtime hill that barely crosses beneath the first with a great head chopper, completing a perfect figure eight. You turn around again right against the lift hill, then enter a mini overbank that's whippy and fun. You reverse course again, snap hard left, and enter a bonkers bunny hill before a left-hand turn up over the Comet. From here, you can catch your breath as Skyrush coasts gently above the midway and into the brakes. So, I just rode Skyrush, and what a rush it was. I've never ridden anything like it. It's in a class by itself. No other hypercoaster comes close to that level of intensity. It's short, but it doesn't let up until that turn off towards the brakes. It's got unbelievable airtime, crushing positive G's, and a bit of jank. Did I mention it's weird? I think that's part of the appeal of this ride. As for my thighs, uncrushed. Minorly sore from the airtime? Possibly. Did it blow my mind? Not exactly. Did I dig it? Absolutely. We exited Skyrush back into the hollow and walked back up the Kissing Hill for a ride on the Great Bear. This B&M inverted coaster opened in 1998, right when this ride model was all the rage. Like Skyrush, it was built into this tiny piece of land operating over the Super Duper Looper Schwarzkopf coaster. This leads to it having a very unique layout as well. We hopped in line and decided to wait the extra time for a front row ride. The line wasn't too bad, and we were climbing on board within 15 minutes. The train leaves the station and immediately engages the 94-foot lift hill. At the top, you dip down B&M's regular pre-drop, but instead of heading into the first drop, you build speed on a short 360-degree helix. It's a great moment to soak up the view before the bear dives down to the creek below. The drop height is 127 feet due to terrain. At the bottom, you launch into a vertical loop with the water to your right. Next up is a bit of straight track before pulling up into an Immelmann to reverse course. The zero-G roll inverts above a building, then on the pullout there's a quick hop leading into a left-hand turn that crosses over the creek again. I definitely got a pop of airtime on this element. Next, you soar through a relatively straight section of track just above the bank of the creek. You feel the sense of speed while low to the ground, then snap through a corkscrew before meandering above the log flume on the way back to the station. It's a solid B&M invert, and I love those visuals of interacting with the creek and the other rides. Great Bear still runs glass smooth, and that airtime pop was an awesome surprise. It's cool how B&M were able to engineer this coaster into a very crowded space and still make it work. Next, we made our way back to the Chocolate Town Plaza for a ride on Candemonium. We recalled the old internet cartoon where Charlie the Unicorn joins his friends in search of the magical Candy Mountain.
Candy Mountain, Charlie!
I couldn't get that out of my head. The station stands in its own little corner off to the side of the main entrance path. The whole area is fresh and very well done. The wait was posted at 30 minutes, which would have been our longest thus far, but as we entered the queue, it moved along quickly thanks to three train operations. Hershey claims that this is their most highly themed queue, and I suppose they're right. Logos for their major candy brands are plastered all over the walls and the ceilings, and why not? The three trains are painted to represent Reese's in orange, Twizzlers in red, and Kisses in blue. The track is chocolate brown, representing the backbone of the company. I just made that last part up, but it sounds good, right? Now, the interesting thing about Candemonium is that it's the park's second hypercoaster. Skyrush opened just 8 years earlier and is located nearby. Many enthusiasts thought this was a strange decision to build such a similar attraction. They didn't follow the Carowinds model by going larger with a Giga next to a hyper. Candemonium stands just 10 feet taller than Skyrush, but the layout is over 1,000 feet longer, and therein lies the answer. Because Hershey Park was landlocked when they built Skyrush, the ride turned out more intense than the park wanted because they had to build tighter elements creating higher G-forces than most hypercoasters. The park acquired additional land, allowing more space for a longer layout with larger elements creating a less forceful ride. Fresh off our first rides on Skyrush, we were ready to take on the more mild hyper. Upon entering the station, we opted for the back row. Candemonium features 7-row trains like Mako at SeaWorld Orlando, but unlike that ride, there are seatbelts along with the B&M clamshell lap bar. Properly secure, it was time to kiss the station goodbye and head out on Hershey Park's tallest, longest, and fastest roller coaster. You pitch up onto the lift hill right out of the station and quickly ascend to the top. The whole park is behind you with only a view of the parking lot to the right. The front of the train begins to fall, and you're whipped down a 76-degree first drop to ground level. The max angle lasts longer than Skyrush, and there's no wacky kink. It's smooth and fun. You emerge from the valley into a parabolic camelback, providing strong sustained floater airtime before the positives come back on and the train navigates a hammerhead turnaround similar to Mako's. You pick up speed as the train reaches the ground, then head upward into another large camelback. This one is lightly trimmed, but it doesn't hurt the ride. Next comes a sweet speed hill, providing excellent flowjector before a 360-degree upward right-hand helix. It's got some great positives, but on exiting the element, the train banks left, giving a bit of sideways airtime. It feels like a mini version of the treble clef on Fury 325 and the last hill on Orion, and it's a great whippy moment. You then drop down again, heading straight towards the Kisses Fountain. The train climbs up another hill and hits a nasty trim break. It hits hard, and it's definitely a buzzkill. Next, you bank left, twisting around the fountain before another short hop leading into the brakes. So Candemonium just might be my favorite B&M hyper. I strongly prefer their newer hypers to the older ones because they've profiled the hills to provide stronger airtime that's sustained through each hill. Despite the second trim, this coaster has a stronger finish than Mako, hands down. It's butter smooth and delivers that sublime re-rideability that makes B&M's hyper model so good. I really like having this next to Skyrush. While it's a 200-foot-tall coaster featuring hills and turns without inversions, the overall feel of the ride couldn't be more different. Hershey Park's two strikingly different hypercoasters may in fact complement each other better than the three-seater Fair Park sporting both B&M Hyper and Giga installations. As far as the Candy Rush saga goes, I'm a fan. So we'd just ridden six of the best coasters at Hershey Park before lunch. It was about 1:30, and we were definitely ready to eat. We ended up at the 1906 Grill located on Founders Way. It's typical theme park fare, and I enjoyed my chicken fingers and fries. After lunch, we decided to trek all the way to the back of the park for a ride on Lightning Racer. As we passed Fahrenheit, the track absolutely popped against the blue sky, and I tried to take photos and videos, but the sun was right behind the ride, making this impossible, so we continued all the way to the back. Lightning Racer is oddly placed in a far corner of the park beyond the boardwalk's water attractions. Opened in 2000, this was GCI's second dueling wood coaster following Gwazi at Busch Gardens Tampa, which opened the year before. I'd ridden Gwazi several times before it closed, and on its best days, it did nothing for me. Lightning Racer is said to be much better, so I was excited for this one. Carl and Marcus waited for the second row on the Thunder side, with me riding row 2 on Lightning. We left the station in GCI's phenomenal Millennium Flyer trains and reversed course to engage the staggered lift hills. Thunder would start the race just behind Lightning. The tracks run spaced out on the first lap out, then turn around in opposite directions to rendezvous in the center where the race really gets interesting. The two sides cross each other 4 times during the ride and stay close the whole time. The double out and back layout features GCI's trademark laterals and airtime with dueling elements, making it all the better. Carl and Marcus won this race, and it was amazing how much better this coaster was than Gwazi. The dueling worked perfectly, and the actual roller coaster was fun as well. While I thought it tracked well, Carl and Marcus said it was too rough for their liking. With that, we went back to Wildcat's Revenge for a second ride. This time we opted to ride up front. The line was about 20 minutes, and it was well worth it. While the visuals are spectacular, the front felt even more intense than the back. It may also be that the ride had time to warm up since our first time this morning. The speed on the 2-0-G rolls was almost too much. I've never felt whip like that on a roller coaster. The lateral moments were insane, and overall, this coaster has that same aggressive feel as Airy Force One. Joe Drave's two RMC creations have a feel of their own. As bonkers as Alan Schilke's rides were, Drave's kicks up the intensity by another quarter point, and he's not afraid to throw in stupid ejector airtime or ungodly whip or laterals. If this is a sign of where RMC is going, I think we've got a lot to look forward to. By this point, Carl and Marcus were getting close to being coastered out. My initial inclination was to ride more of the park's supporting coasters like the Comet and Super Duper Looper, but they were looking to form an exit strategy and weren't interested in getting credits like I am. We decided to take one more ride each on Fahrenheit, Stormrunner, Skyrush, and Candemonium. Waits were pretty short, and by the time we'd re-ridden the best coasters in the park, it was about 4 p.m. We got off Candemonium, and I walked back down the hill to get photos and videos of Skyrush, and encountered the same problem as Fahrenheit. It felt like we were chasing the sun trying to get pictures. I'd have to start tomorrow with photos and videos before riding. We chose to end the day with ice cream at Milton's right inside the flagship gift shop, and it was so good. It had been a great first day at Hershey Park, and I was glad to have an entire second day to take more rides on my favorites and check out some of the park's other attractions. We returned to the hotel and cleaned up before heading to dinner at the El Sol Mexican restaurant in Harrisburg. The food was awesome and the margaritas flowed freely. I had a great time catching up with Carl and Marcus and riding some phenomenal roller coasters together. The next morning brought more gorgeous weather, and I had breakfast with Carl and Marcus before we parted ways. I returned to Hershey Park for a second full day and started out taking the photos and videos that I couldn't the day before. I only had about an hour before the sun would be behind all the major rides, and I really wanted to have some good stuff for Instagram. If you enjoy the podcast, I strongly encourage you to follow me at Coaster Redux on Facebook and Instagram. My socials really are a companion piece to the podcast. I like to post a reel right after I leave a park to capture the feeling of the day, and another one once the podcast episode drops. Anyway, I started out at Fahrenheit again because of its low capacity, then made my way around riding all the other coasters. Between Wildcat's Revenge and Storm Runner, I stopped at Jolly Rancher Remix and walked on board for a ride. This Vekoma Boomerang has been here since 1991 as Sidewinder, but was renamed and rethemed in 2021. It looks great with the bright colors of the Jolly Rancher candies throughout. Part of the redo was adding a Zamperla Nebula's flat ride right under the Cobra Roll, and it's very visually impressive. The ride itself was good enough. The trains were replaced with the retheme and feature vest restraints to prevent headbanging. There's a shed between the Cobra Roll and the Vertical Loop that's supposed to smell like a different flavor of Jolly Rancher on each cycle, but I couldn't smell anything. Regardless, the park did a nice job refreshing this area, and I think it's great that with this and Candemonium they're really playing up the candy theme for the first time. It just makes sense. After Storm Runner and Sky Rush, I decided to check out Super Duper Looper. This was the second modern coaster to feature a vertical loop, opening 1 year after Revolution at Six Flags Magic Mountain. It uses the terrain in the hollow, and it's really cool how they work the Great Bear in around this ride. I waited about 20 minutes for this one, and it's an enjoyable classic. It tracks smoothly and has a unique layout winding along the hillside. Next up was the Comet. Built in 1946, this PTC wood coaster is the oldest at Hershey Park. After 25 minutes in line, I climbed aboard the three-bench trains with buzz bars. The train was filled with younger riders taking their first big roller coaster rides alongside their parents. The ride has a T-shaped layout, and again, it's amazing how the park worked its newer attractions around it. Skyrush's lift goes directly over Comet's first drop. Super Duper Looper's final turn is wedged against the second drop, as is Skyrush's station. As for the Comet, it's an absolute joy. It's smooth as should be, and it's got a great presence in the park. You get plenty of floater moments with those buzz bars. Unfortunately, next year Hershey Park will be replacing these trains with newer ones from PTC, so I was happy to have ridden this coaster with the more minimalist restraint. I started to get hungry and stopped at Chickie and Pete's on my way to the back of the park. I had a buffalo chicken Philly cheesesteak, and it was really good. While I wanted to try their crab fries, the sandwich was so big, I couldn't imagine eating fries along with it. My final two credits resided next to each other back by the water park. First was the Wild Mouse, and it was a typical Mach Rides lateral machine with hairpin turns. Second was Laugh Track. It's an enclosed Mauer spinning coaster, and it had the longest wait throughout my visit. I waited 45 minutes for it, and I only did that after getting my fill of everything else in the park. It's fun. The show building is lit with black lights, and you whiz and spin through a glow-in-the-dark funhouse. I'm glad I rode it once. I wrapped up my second day in the park absolutely loving this place. It's a beautiful traditional amusement park with one heck of a well-rounded coaster collection. So how do the coasters at Hershey Park stack up? I'm now joined by my brother Carl to go through our opinions on everything in the park. Hey Carl, welcome back to Coaster Redux.
Hey, thanks for having me, Eric.
Glad to have you back. So we spent a day at Hershey Park together back in September, and I had an awesome time. And so tell us overall, like, what were your impressions of the park?
Yeah, so I mean, it's strange, you know, as we had mentioned before, I think, like, I've been to Hershey Park, but it was back when I was in college. And so just kind of have a, I don't know why a memory from college might be hazy, but it was a little bit of a fuzzy memory. So it was cool to kind of like jog that again and get to like go experience the park again. It was a really impressive array of rides, and had a great time with you and Marcus being there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was great hanging out with you guys and just getting to ride all the different coasters. And I just think that they have a great atmosphere, a great vibe. It's got a traditional amusement park sort of feel. And I think Cedar Point's got one of the best vibes out there as far as parks. But, you know, Hershey's got a really good one, too. Just, you know, people feel like they're having a good time. It's not so corporate, even though it is corporate, but it's their only park. So you don't get that. It's not like Six Flags where you've got branding. I mean, of course they're branding Hershey, but they just, you know, slap stickers on everything, and you know, Hershey feels like it's its own unique place that's really paying tribute to the parent company. So
yeah, absolutely. No, that's a good point. My only like disappointment for it was I was expecting to see some Oompa Loompas walking around, and there weren't There weren't
that would have been nice. Yeah, Wonka. they should do a Wonka ride. Do they? I don't know. Do they own Wonka?
Ah, that's a good question. I don't know.
It might not.
I did really like a couple of like queens of pop that we saw walking around, like Hershey's Kisses with giant lips and high heels and stuff. That like, I don't know, that sort of campy stuff. I've started to like appreciate as I get older.
Yeah, and I mean, why not? It's just that's what theme parks are all about. It's all about the fun and the escape and just
yeah.
It's all about fun. So I thought that their roller coaster lineup is one of the most stacked out there. I mean, you can compare them to Cedar Point. I think Cedar Point wins in a lot of ways, but they really do have a very, very top heavy lineup, at least as far as all the different parks I've been to. So when I did the podcast, I didn't really go in depth on my reactions to the ride so much. And so I wanted to wait and share that part with you. So let's go and count down our top five rides at Hershey Park, and I'll let you begin with your number five.
Yeah, my number five is, you know, just the little pocket coaster that really packs a punch. I'm giving number five spot to Fahrenheit, which is kind of surprising that it's like it's that low, because that at plenty of other parks in the country could be like one of the best rides. So to have that like spot number five on a list of coasters, I think it's a testament to the quality of the rides at Hershey Park overall. I just liked that the smoothness, the compactness, like it, you know, that could fit inside of a mall and also be like a world-class ride. So just really innovative and cool, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. And I also had Fahrenheit at my number five, and I think it's totally unique. I mean, there are other coasters out there that have a sort of similar feel with a vertical lift and a beyond vertical drop, but it's intense, it's smooth, it's got a lot of different elements, and there's nothing else out there that's like it. And I agree, yeah. Like if you plunk that down at most other parks, it could be the best coaster in the park.
Yeah. Yeah, I think back to like a Riverside, like pre-Six Flags New England days, like before Superman Ride of Steel was placed in there, like could have, you know, knocked everything out of the park that was in the park. So
yep, absolutely.
Cool ride.
All right, and number four,
which is now my new favorite B&M hyper, that's going to Candemonium.
Right, this is funny, we agree so far.
Oh man, this is a first. We'll have to Mom's not gonna believe
like,
it.
Compare notes and create some controversy or something. But I think this is the part for me that really speaks to how strong their lineup is, that at most other parks in the world, a B&M hyper is going to be their number one. So yeah, the fact yes. that we're saying that the fourth best coaster at Hershey Park is their B&M hyper, and that might be my favorite B&M hyper. I'm still kind of torn between that and Mako, but I think it's just got a really strong layout with some awesome floater airtime. It's got a little bit of that sideways airtime that B&M are starting to, they're like tiptoeing into the RMC and Intamin territory of doing some stuff that's a little bit more interesting. But that moment where you come off the helix and do that sideways twist and then head down into another airtime hill is really good. And, you know, it's butter smooth. It's a capacity machine, and it's what the park, I think, wanted Skyrush to be initially. I think it works having that with Skyrush in the same park. Again, the fact that possibly my favorite B&M hyper is the number four ride in the park is pretty nuts.
Yeah. I mean, just to like take a step back to and look at what's at the park, of like to have two hypers literally next to each other too. Like what other parks also have that?
Yeah.
And like both very strong hyper coasters too. So yeah, I think the I think the airtime, I would say, is, you know, stronger than just regular floater airtime. I thought that was, not full on ejector, but I'd put it in the flowjector category. It was really, really strong.
Yep. Carowinds kind of started off this whole, I guess Cedar Point really started off this having two 200 plus foot tall roller coasters with no inversions, with Magnum XL200 and then Millennium Force. And, you know, those rides are just so completely different that I don't think anybody could really question it. But then when Carowinds built Fury 325 only a couple years after Intimidator, and there are two rides from the same manufacturer standing next to each other, you know, those two are a lot more similar than I would say Skyrush and Candemonium, just because, you know, you got the one that's the Intamin that's super intense and the other one that's a little bit more floaty, but it works. I think it's a great fit for the park.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. I'm going to hazard to guess that our number threes are probably the same, too.
Oh, actually, I was thinking probably not, but let's.
Oh, okay.
So for three, I put Wildcat's Revenge.
Ooh, that low, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Explain yourself.
Maybe the fact that you and I have very recently ridden Iron Gwazi might play a factor of it. I mean, it's fine. Of the four RMCs that I've ridden, it is my third favorite.
Okay.
So our RMC is going to RMC, and they are fun. I like what they're doing. I want them to continue doing what they're doing, but I just think it was nothing like spectacularly innovative about it. It was an RMC, which is not a bad thing, and it's a very strong lineup of coasters at this park. But it's like, you know, you get the RMC experience on any RMC out there, and so I think it didn't. There's nothing unique and special about it, and I think that's kind of what brought it down. I mean, still phenomenal ride, still smooth, still all of like the great RMC kind of like fake outs. You know, you're coming over like a turn banked the wrong way, and then you think you're going to level out and go one way, and then it just like fools you and you go the other way. I mean, it does all the tricks and everything, but it's kind of now it's a little bit of, I don't want to say been there, done that, because it sounds like I am belittling it, but it wasn't as special as, you know, some of the other unique rides at the park.
Okay. So I'm hearing you say, I think that for you, RMC is kind of like B&M, where maybe once you've ridden one, you kind of get it and, you know, what's different about it versus what's different about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's accurate. So it's like, you know, you ride Kumba for the first time and it's like, oh my God, they did that. And then you ride every floorless that they've done since. And it's like, okay, I get it. And it's hard to ride another one and be like, oh, this really, you know, shattered the mold for me.
Right. And I get that. And I think that RMC has actually grown on me as I've ridden more of them. I think I've ridden 9 or something by now, maybe 10. I don't have it off the top of my head, but somewhere in that neighborhood. And when I first rode Twisted Timbers at King's Dominion a couple years ago with you, I was like, yeah, okay, like that's cool. But it was choppy, those little choppy ejector airtime moments I didn't care for. But as I've ridden more, I think it's almost like maybe a fine wine where you start to pick up on different flavor notes. And you see some of the genius about just how they execute the elements. So like after riding Airy Force One, that one and then Wildcat's Revenge have a very similar feel. They're even more aggressive than some of the other rides that they've built. And that's because they've got a new designer who's designing the track layouts, Joe Draves. I think I certainly like what RMC does a lot more, for example, than what B&M does. And I think when you start to pick up on nuances, so even after Iron Gwazi was my second RMC, and it was my number two coaster after I rode it. And then as I've gone out and ridden more other RMCs, I come back to Iron Gwazi and we rode it a couple weeks ago. And I even picked up on more of the, just like the way it, say going into the death roll, you go up and it levels out, but you just stay, you know, out of your seat while you're twisting. I think there's so much of those little nuances that they just do so well. And as I've ridden more of them, I've developed more of an appreciation than I think I got on my first ride, when I did kind of have that same opinion, like, yeah, this is fun. I really like it, but it's not my cup of tea so much. I think it's becoming my cup of tea more.
What I'm hearing is when you were in college and you were just getting into drinking beer, and the first time you had a Bass Ale and you were going, I can taste the flavor notes.
Well, I guess it is kind of the same thing. And then as you improve your, for lack of a better word, connoisseurship, you start to become more of a nerd, and you do geek out over more of the nuances. So
yeah,
I'll take that.
Yeah, no, that's a feather in the cap. That's not something to be it's not something to be ashamed of, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure obviously anybody listening to this is gonna nerd out just as much as we do. So
otherwise, yeah, I'm sure
not listening to a roller coaster podcast.
I'm sure someone just heard what I said and like threw an AirPod across the room, like, this guy's an idiot.
Yep. Well, they would be correct.
Yeah, but for other reasons. Now, what was your number three?
My number three was Stormrunner.
Okay.
Is it my favorite Intamin hydraulic launch coaster? It might be. I've since been on, I'd ridden King to Ka. I've since been on Accelerator, which is coming as to another future episode. I actually had ridden Accelerator back in 2006, and I remember loving the launch. It doesn't have much of a layout after that. King to Ka obviously has the massive height, and, you know, Storm Runner really has a really great full package layout. It's got that intense launch. It has, you know, three inversions that are very unique and very interesting. And that coaster, I could ride that thing all day. It's short, but it does have a complete experience, which is something that a lot of those other Intamin hydraulic launch coasters lack. And the other thing is, I never really hear about Storm Runner having major technical problems like King to Ka, Topfield Dragster, Accelerator. Everybody's always saying, yeah, these things are always down, but that thing was running the whole time we were there. It never went down that I was aware of. So hopefully that continues operating with that launch system for a long time to come.
Yeah. And to be now 20 years running, I mean, it's impressive to still have. I mean, there was a little bit of a rattle, I think, but I mean, still the smoothness is there. The intensity is there. And then just the reliability, you know, not a lot of coasters, especially coasters of that level of intensity, can stack up 20 years later the way that it does.
Yeah. You know, it's got, I call it that like Intamin shuffle.
That's a good word for it.
Superman has it. I think it's just the way they make them. I mean, Millennium Force has it. It's got that. It's not quite so butter smooth as a Candemonium is, but it's not unpleasant either. You definitely notice it more on a ride like King to Ka when you get up to 128 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But, you know, Storm Runner only goes 75, 80, whatever it is. I think it's a comfortable ride. And the other thing I really like about it is the way on the top hat.
75. Yeah.
Yeah. So on the top hat, you go straight down versus a lot of the other ones where you've got that twist. So you get that. I think we decided the front row on that was the best.
I think so. Yeah. Cause my whole theory with front row was that, like, you know, you usually miss out on the first drop, but everything after that, I like it. You start out with more speed at the beginning of whatever bunny hill you're going over. And so I like to start out just getting completely ejected and then kind of like settle back into it versus, you know, it's the opposite of like a crescendo. If you're sitting in the back where, you know, you are the slowest car of the train coming into it, but then you're the fastest going out of it.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, that the top hat in the front, you get your money's worth out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So Storm Runner number three, and your number three, Wildcat's Revenge. Let's go to number two.
Number two for me is Storm Runner. Of my top five, that was the only ride that was in the park when I visited back in 2000. I think it was 2006. Spoiler alert then of what my number one ride is, but I remembered it being like earth-shatteringly cool. I didn't remember like the specifics of what I liked about it. I just remember like, oh, there's this one really cool launched ride. And if you remember the last time I was a guest on the podcast, we talked about the Hershey Park visit together, and I was saying that it was the ride that I looked forward to the most out of all of them, just to like revisit it because I didn't remember specifically of why I thought it was cool. And now just to like have a little bit more like coaster wherewithal with me, it was cool to revisit. And I agree with you, like it really packs a punch. My only complaint is like I want more, because there's still so much energy that just gets dissipated on that brake run. I mean, you are like descending into the brake run at what is max speed for plenty of other intense coasters in this country. So I want more, but that's not a bad thing. Like, also know when to quit when you're ahead.
Yep. Right. And again, it does have a lot more of a complete layout than so many others out there. I think you would really, really like Maverick at Cedar Point. So
I can't wait for that.
That is just so good. But
and also, can we just talk about the hydraulic launch for a second too? Just like, yeah, like neck breaking.
It is. I mean, those launches are unbelievable. In the podcast, you hear the audio, and I think you can hear me go like, ah, ha, ha, ha. Like you can't help but laugh. Like I'm not a screamer. I don't really go like, yeah, woo, when I'm riding coasters.
That's a lie.
Like that. I really don't. But yeah. That, like, you can't not say something. Like, an emotion just comes up from within.
Yeah, and you elation.
Experience that feeling. Yeah, exactly. Supposedly, the only other type of launch that even compares to it is the compressed air launch that SNS uses. Those are actually supposed to be a little bit more intense, and there are still a few rides out there with that.
Yeah. So
hopefully you'll get to check some of those out at some point pretty soon.
Yeah, hope so.
All right, so my number two is the coaster that was my most anticipated coaster of this trip, and that is Skyrush. I think it's the roughness that lets it down, especially when you ride in the wing seats, but even when you ride in the middle seats, it's got that bounce to it. And I didn't get thigh crushed too badly. Like, that didn't kill it for me. And I'm not saying the ride is killed at all, because it's still a really great coaster. But I think what prevented me from putting my opinions on that ride in the stratosphere is that it's not as butter smooth as I would like for a newer Intamin.
Okay. Yeah.
But the airtime is absurd. The layout is absurd. It's just bonkers fun.
Yeah. Well, I'll go in and give my opinions on it now. So, the cat's out of the bag that it's my number one for the park. I think it's like the cherry on top of your Hershey's fudge sundae of the park. Just the fact that the rides in their collection of coasters are really cutting edge, and I really appreciate their willingness to push the envelope. And I really think Skyrush it's an envelope pushing coaster. I mean, the fact that they allow something that intense to just be open to the public, I think is really cool. And I think a lot of, like your Six Flags aren't willing to take risks like that, so it's not worried about being a people pleaser, or, they're not trying to make it appeal to the masses. It is just this thing that is a notch or two more intense than I think the average park goer likes. And they didn't let that squash it on the draft table. And I'm saying this as, like, the first ride that we did of it, Marcus was sitting in the wing seat. I was in the center seat. And I, like, at one point turned to look over to, like, see if he was enjoying the ride, cause I didn't hear anything from him. As we, like, went over a stupid airtime, we were transitioning from a turning airtime hill into, like, a stupid positive G turn. And I, like, tweaked a muscle in my neck and was physically in pain from this ride for a few days, but, like, I'm not holding that against it. Like, the fact that a ride like that exists and is just like, yeah, screw it. Like, all in the same way that, like, I appreciate RMC kind of throwing out the rule book. Like, this, I feel like RMC throws out the designer's rule book. This, I think, throws out the lawyer's rule book. And that's sort of, if that just gets burned and never brought back, like, I'd be happy with.
Absolutely. I mean, that would be, I think, all of our dreams if the lawyers would just, like, take a little step back and let us have fun again. Like, can we just have diving boards back? Stuff like that. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
I think that Skyrush was almost a mistake in a lot of ways. And I think it's Intamin who just pushes the envelope so hard.
It's a happy little accident.
Yeah, exactly. and so because they had a really small amount of land to work with when that was built, they didn't have the plot of land where Candemonium is now. So they wanted a hyper, and by gosh, they squeezed that hyper in. And so that's why it's short, but just super, super intense. But that's Intamin for you. They've had failures. They're not afraid to fail. And
they let the intern make the design and said, hey, this is it.
Yeah. But they always have pushed the envelope, and they're willing to keep doing it. And I think that's why we just get so many of these rides that fall into this. How did this get built? I-305 falls in that same category.
Sure.
Just with that level of berserk intensity. And it's too much for some, but for those of us who enjoy roller coasters, like, thank God for Intamin and for Hershey Park for taking those risks and for opening these types of rides.
Yeah, I agree. If I could go back in time, I'd change my AOL Instant Messenger screen name handle to Intamin Fanboy, spelled B-O-I.
Oh, that would be very 2001.
Very fitting for when Skyrush was built.
Yeah, exactly. That was actually 2012, though.
It was 2012. Yep. I'm thinking of Storm Runner. That was 2004.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I just love about Hershey Park is they've got those three Intamins that are all just so good and so unique. Intamin just, they've got that sort of special willingness to always innovate. And, there's never been really another ride that's quite like Fahrenheit. They only built a handful of these hydraulic launch coasters. Obviously, they've been problematic. They're always pushing the envelope. They're going and building Falcon's Flight in Saudi Arabia, which is going to be 500 something feet tall. It's going to be absurd.
I've been watching videos of that. It's still, it looks, it's stupid.
And I think it's at the point where Intamin's the only designer that would even take on something like that.
I think you're right.
I have it on pretty good authority that, you know, other manufacturers were given the opportunity and they're like, yeah, no, we don't want that hassle.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really just like a Saudi prince saying, like, I'm going to build the world's tallest roller coaster because I have that much money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably nobody's going to ride it, but still building it.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sounds like not an easy thing to get to, but almost like it makes it a serious destination piece.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know Saudi Arabia is trying to up their tourism game and they're building another. It's an SNS Axis coaster, which if you don't know what that is, you know, YouTube it later. But it's basically a ride that can go either above or below the track. And it's got a car that is able to spin on its axis. So like as you roll above or below the track, the car stays level.
So basically like those GoPro stabilized videos only like in real life.
Pretty much. Sometimes it'll go outside the track. Sometimes it'll go above the track. Sometimes it'll go below the track. So I'd say it's like a GoPro video, but also kind of like an Arrow suspended coaster, kind of in the same way.
Mm, nice.
Yeah. There's one coming to Saudi Arabia. I know that.
Okay.
So that might be the next great coaster adventure going to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, maybe. Hearing you talk about Stormrunner and Skycrush and then Velocicoaster almost makes you think like you can almost see like that's like a logical progression of those three rides, of them just kind of like nailing it and finally like getting the smoothness piece down. Not finally, like there are plenty of smooth Intamin rides out there, but like just the steps to Velocicoaster, I feel like you can kind of map that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And RMC played a role in that too, because they really, you know, pioneered that sort of off-axis outer bank stuff. And
yeah,
Intamin's definitely playing with that now. And B&M is sticking their toe, their pinky toe in the water on it just a little bit. But, you know, I think there's a lot to look forward to in the industry. And speaking of that, there's a rumor going around that the restraints on Skyrush are going to be replaced with the same restraints that are on Velocicoaster over this winter. So that's not confirmed, but if that's the case, then I really got to get back on that thing.
Cool. Yeah, same. I mean, I had zero qualms with the restraints, but anything to make it more comfortable, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think the difference is that the current restraints rest a little bit more mid-thigh, whereas Velocicoasters come just a little bit higher on the hip. So I think it would just be a little more comfortable setup. I mean, because when I first got on it, I was like, this is fine. How is this going to bother me? And it didn't bother me that much, but I think it bothered me just enough that I couldn't award Skyrush my number one spot in the park.
Mm. Okay.
So of course for that, my number one at Hershey Park is Wildcat's Revenge. It's by about as big a margin as Velocicoaster is above Iron Gwazi. It's so smooth. It's super intense and it just does a little bit more of what I like. It's got more of the variations in the elements. You have laterals on an RMC, which is cool. I mean, you know, laterals are a force that you don't get that much. I think I could do without the laterals being so ridiculously strong, but it's different and I like it. And I know that after we rode it and it warmed up and we rode in the front row that second ride of the day, like the way that ride took those 2 0-G rolls was almost violent. And I never felt that type of whip before. I mean, the Mosasaurus roll's got its own unique vibe to it, its own feel. But the way that that Wildcat's Revenge just absolutely ripped through those 2 0-G rolls, I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that what I liked about Wildcat's Revenge is that there's so much going on and it's so rapid fire and it's so smooth and it's so fluid that just did it for me. Whereas if Skyrush was just a little smoother, I could have given it that top spot, but
sure.
I guess I'm a smoothness Nazi.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I see where you're coming from. I think you're wrong.
Well, and that's, you know what they say about opinions.
Mine are the best.
Yeah, that's it. That's your opinion. like I said, overall, Hershey Park was a blast. It was great to hang out with you guys and get to visit it. I mean, did Marcus have a favorite? I think he said it was Wildcat.
It was. Yeah. Wildcat's Revenge was also his favorite.
Yeah. So he's got good taste.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've already talked about it a little bit, but we had the chance to go to Busch Gardens Tampa, your favorite amusement park, over New Year's, and you got your first rides on Iron Gwazi. So just talk a little bit about your thoughts on that coaster, how it compares to some of the other ones you've ridden. And, you know, obviously for me, it's a coaster that I really, really like. And every time I get on it, I'm reminded just how good it is. So I'd love to hear some.
They put so much into that ride. I have a soft spot for the original Gwazi in my heart. So, I'm weird. We've established that. I don't regret them replacing the original Gwazi with Iron Gwazi, because just a really, you know, all out spectacular ride. Yeah, I think it's the first RMC that I've ridden that I knew the layout of its predecessor, and so seeing what they did with that. I don't know, it's cool to be able to like see how they repurposed the space and kind of, you know, similar footprint for the original Gwazi. So it completely blew me out of the water. I mean, just from the first drop on, like, it never lets up, and there's a rhythm to it and a dance that it does the whole time that like gives you a couple little like quick pause to catch your breath. Okay, then now we're like back into it. I mean, it's like a symphony, just how well they executed that ride.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've said that I like that ride above the other RMCs because everything on it is big and everything on it is fluid, and you don't have any of that jerky little silly stuff. Just like, hey, I can give you a whole bunch of ridiculous airtime. Every element on that ride delivers. It has purpose. It has function. And even though it's shorter than, say, Steel Vengeance, it still is a great, fluid, complete ride experience.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. Everything has a purpose. Nothing is just because.
Yeah. Have you figured out where that might sit in your kind of overall?
I think it's number three in my overall lineup of coasters. So El Toro circa 2010 is still, you know, my number one. Then after that, Fly. I think Iron Gwazi is a really solid contender though.
Yeah. I mean, can't argue with any of those rides. I got to get to Fantasialand. That thing just looks so awesome. And here's hoping they build something like that here in the States. But yeah, so I mean, I had a blast riding the coasters at Hershey Park with you. And I'm glad you guys got to come and ride Iron Gwazi too. And hopefully we get up to Cedar Point over this coming summer. And we'll do a couple more days up there and get you on some of the great stuff there, because that park is still can't be beat as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm dying to get back up there.
Well, hopefully we make it happen. So again, thanks for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
I returned to my hotel with that same feeling of lament I experienced when I left Dollywood last year. I didn't have a new park to visit tomorrow, and I was 17 hours away from home. I'd allotted Saturday and Sunday for the drive back to South Florida, and I didn't return to work until Tuesday. That would give me a full day to decompress, unpack, do laundry, and get ready for re-entry. You know, that inevitable barrage of work that's been piling up for 2 full weeks that's just waiting for me in the office. I hadn't made a hotel reservation for the next night and set about getting that out of the way. I pulled up Google Maps and was looking at the route, and it hit me. Carowinds is about halfway home. Interesting. I would love to pop into that park for a couple hours and maybe get some night rides on Fury 325. Maybe that way I could keep the fun vacation vibe alive for another day, and give myself something to look forward to other than 1,100 miles and re-entry. I pulled up Carowinds' website on my laptop, and they were offering a promotion for their 2024 season passes. I didn't have a Cedar Fair pass at the time, but I planned to buy one for next year, and the deal was too good to pass up. I booked a room at the same Town Place Suites I stayed at on my first visit to Carowinds last year, and bought the 2024 pass, which gave me access to all the chain's parks for the rest of this year as well as next. Now we're talking. I awoke the next morning motivated to get on the road to maximize my time at Carowinds. Unfortunately, about an hour into the trip, there was a major accident resulting in a section of I-84 being closed and leading to gridlock traffic that cost me an extra 2 hours. While I didn't get to the park until almost 7 p.m., I had plenty of time. I started with Fury, then made my way back to Copperhead Strike for a sunset ride. While it was only running one train and the line was about a half hour,
I got off this mock multi-launch coaster remembering just how much I enjoy its varied elements. I checked out the new Aeronautica landing at dusk, and it was a massive improvement to the park. I grabbed a night ride on Intimidator, which was also so much fun, before returning to Fury to marathon it with only a 5-minute wait. I got a total of 7 rides on my favorite Giga that night, and it was running even better than I remember from my rainy visit in November. It was absolutely hauling through the layout with unparalleled whip and airtime. The combination of darkness and the LED lights on the lift hill and the hive dive combined for a serendipitous ending to my trip. I couldn't have been happier. Over the course of 2 weeks and 3,460 miles, I visited 7 parks and added 31 new coasters to my track record. The Intamin trip was in the books, and it was unforgettable. I hope you've enjoyed this journey as much as I did, but my 2023 wasn't over yet. My next roller coaster adventure brought me to Southern California for a 4-day getaway the first weekend in December. I took advantage of low airfares and inexpensive hotels during this known dead week for tourism to check out Six Flags Magic Mountain and Knott's Berry Farm. I'd made a quick visit to Knott's back in 2006 when I was in town for a wedding, but I didn't really get a good feel for the park. And after visiting Hershey Park, Six Flags Magic Mountain was next on my bucket list as it sports more roller coasters than any other park in the world. Join me for the next episode for my first-time reactions to rides like Tatsu, Full Throttle, Twisted Colossus, and of course X2. 2 full days at Six Flags Magic Mountain during Holiday in the Park are coming up next time on Coaster Redux. That's a wrap for this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help me out by reviewing, sharing, and subscribing. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Coaster Redux.
Thank you for listening to Coaster Redux. Until next time, enjoy the ride.